Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. Well, you know, if you've been listening to us over the last few years, you know that a really common theme on American Variety is that we have people on who have like a very unusual or crazy dream, you know, the kind of thing that sort of a vision that people tell them, no, that's nuts. I mean, you know, go be an accountant or a lawyer or a fireman or whatever. Do something normal. You're just going to fail at that and make yourself really unhappy. But they pursue it against all odds. You know, and it's been a whole spectrum of things over the years of people who pursued a very unusual, creative, innovative dream and have succeeded at it. So my guest today is doing something like that. His name is David Millarc. He's actually a nursery owner in Copemish, Michigan, somewhere in the northern part of the lower part of Michigan, I guess. Anyway, up there where it's really cold. And he had the idea of cloning ancient trees, the kind that are in old growth forests that are becoming basically endangered and extinct, and sort of propagating them and starting them over again as new forests. And, you know, that's something that probably has never occurred to anybody in our listening audience, or maybe a few people, but I guarantee you those few to whom it has occurred have not done it like David has. So welcome, David.
Well, it's very nice to be with you today.
Thanks for being on with us. So as I started off describing, you know, you do this this thing where you're remaking the ancient disappearing old growth forests. You co-founded something called the Champion Tree Project, which has now grown into the Archangel Ancient Tree Archive. And you and your colleagues are getting a lot of attention lately for doing this. So why don't you just kind of plunge in and tell us what you do and why?
Well, what we do is we travel around the world, and we have lists of the oldest and largest living things on Earth, which happen to be trees.
Mm.
So we've set out to clone an archive, a genetic archive, of the largest and oldest living trees of different tree species around the world. That is one of the goals and objectives that we have. And you might say, well, why on Earth would you like to do that? Well, we think that they're going to play a key role in a climate change challenge that we're all facing by reestablishing, rebuilding, for the first time, ancient old-growth forests around the world. This project, Archangel Ancient Tree Archive, was founded about 3 years ago as a nonprofit by myself, my son Jared, and Leslie Lee of Northern Michigan also.
Hmm.
So 3 years ago, she had been reading about our former incarnation of work, the Champion Tree Project, which was pretty much working within the United States, cloning the biggest and oldest trees of the United States. She thinks bigger than we had, and she said, well, why don't we expand this out to a global project, go after the very largest and oldest trees on Earth, the 100 largest and oldest species.
Wow.
Then start to really incorporate these and really reconstruct and rebuild old growth forests.
All right, so Leslie Lee is kind of your angel, I guess. Is she an active day-to-day partner or more your funding support and champion in general?
Both. Uh-huh. She is a mover and a shaker. She founded the Fortune 500 company a few years ago, and she's very well known globally. What she sets her mind to and puts her hand to, she's had tremendous success globally on her projects. When she sets her hand to it, she doesn't turn around and leave. She stays right there and helps form the team, does the day-to-day, does everything until the business is up and running and successful on a global level. That's how she operates.
Kind of a silly question, but it just occurred to me. Your name is Millarc, which ends in A-R-C-H, and I called her your angel in the investment sense, but did Archangel, which is the first part of your project, come from that by any chance?
No, not at all. We were bouncing the ball back and forth, she and I and my son, talking about what we might be able to do, what we could try and do. And she was asking, well, what kind of startup money do you think it would take? Because I'm only going to invest in the startup. It has to be up and running on its own. And I said, well, you're an angel, you know, if you can do that. She goes, well, you know, we kind of chuckled. And she goes, well, why don't we call it Archangel?
There you go.
You know, let's go for the big stuff. That's just the way she thinks. So that's how we got that name.
All right, so you were already doing something that I think is a pretty big project to start with, Champion Tree Project, on the U.S. national scale. I mean, that's a lot of land mass, right, and a lot of old forests and a lot of species of trees. But now you've, with Leslie's help and encouragement, you've ramped up to the global scale to do this internationally. So, I mean, what do you exactly do? I mean, For example, is it really cloning in the genetic microbiology sense? Do you hire microbiologists to clone tiny little cells of dead trees, or how do you deal with a tree where you end up with the product that you go on to replant?
Well, first off, there's 95% of all tree species on Earth are self-cloning. Most people don't know that. That's the way that they reproduce themselves.
Mm.
So we use four different technologies to help assist that tree clone itself so we can archive the genetics, multiply that tree out by the millions, and help start the reforestation programs. But micropropagation and tissue culturing are very, very important worldwide for us. We have a tissue culture lab that we work with in New Zealand, one out in California. We have a facility here in Michigan. But that's just one of the four methodologies that we use. And when you take on a global reforestation project, you have to have growers, laboratories, you have to have tissue culture labs worldwide to be able to handle the trees from that region of the world. We've set that up in the first 3 years. And quite frankly, we've been very successful because of the team that was put together. We've always gone for the best people in their field that we could possibly bring into the circle and the team, which we have. And when you have the best in the world on your team in different aspects of your project, your success rate is that which ours is because of that dedicated, passionate, highly educated, and experienced team. So it really is a team effort worldwide.
So this is really not any longer a little amateur operation. It's a fairly complex undertaking. How many people work for the Archangel Archive, for example? What's your staff size?
Archangel, we have 17 people full-time.
Mm.
Most of those people, except for two, are in the United States. But we have colleagues, we have subcontractors, we have tree finders globally all over the world. So there's 17 full-time. And Archangel's terminology is 60 to 80 hours a week. But we have dozens, if not hundreds, of people around the world that are contributing their skills and expertise to the project.
So I would call, based on what you described, rather than really cloning, I mean, it may be called cloning in the tree world or in the botany world,
yeah.
I don't know, but it's what I would think of as propagation, right? So do you take a shoot from a living tree, or how do you do that out in the field? I mean, what do you do? What do you go look for, and what do you do?
Well, cloning of plants goes all the way back to the times of Plato wrote about it thousands of years ago. Most people that drink a glass of wine, that's a clone. Everyone that eats vegetables, those are clones. Anyone that eats apples or pears or fruits, those are all clones. But nobody's ever taken that technology and bridged it over to trees that are several hundred to several thousand years old. So we've kind of cornered that idea. Instead of the largest, oldest trees that are remaining on Earth, and there's very few. By the way, 98% of all of North America's old-growth trees have been cut down.
Mm-hmm.
So there's only 2% of our old-growth forests here in America left. And it's even slimmer than that in most other countries of the world. So we thought at the beginning of this millennium it might be a good idea to archive the genetics of the great trees of Earth so they could be studied. Because none of these trees have been unraveled, their DNA, to be studied or archived or to find out their living memory history, the entire history of that tree species. So that's really what we started to do. But as we started to explore that road, most experts in the world and academic experts said it was nearly impossible or impossible to do that old of trees.
Hmm.
It just won't work. It's like asking a 115-year-old man to have children. So just forget it. We were really dissuaded 15, 18 years ago. But fortunately, they were all wrong.
And so do you have to have a living tree, or can you have, I don't know, like a carved wooden object from a tree that died 300 years ago? Does it have to be a live tree?
We can't raise the dead. We're not that good.
Okay.
Yes, it has to have the spark of life still in it.
Hmm.
But like with Methuselah, the world's oldest measured tree, it's a bristlecone pine, it looks lots more dead than alive, but there's some life in it. And some of the 3,000-year-old sequoias that we recently did, they look more dead than alive. They have been struck by lightning hundreds of times over the last 3,000 years. But as long as there's the spark of life in the trees, we've been very fortunate and very successful in getting them to assist us to cloning them so they can live on.
What do you do? Do you take a little piece of the end of a branch or a piece of bark, or what do you take?
Well, it depends on what tree species it is. It depends on where on Earth, which continent that tree's living on. And there's four basic methods, and we try all four simultaneously when we go to these ancient trees. One is tissue culturing. The other is rooted cuttings, just like you would do a geranium or any other rooted cutting. Then we do air layering in some of the hotter climate trees. And micropropagation is an offshoot of tissue culturing, and we use micropropagation also. So we go at it for several disciplines simultaneously, and we're not always successful the first time. We might have to go back several times over several years, but we stick with it until we usually get it. So, you know, those are all common horticultural practices, but we just have the people around the country and around the world that know the right hormonal mixtures, the right length of daylight, a lot of little tricks that we've gained over the years that give us success where others haven't been so successful.
So I gather you use like a super rich sort of fertilizer hormone mix or something, and then you end up with a sprout or a shoot that you can eventually transplant into a pot of soil, and then from there on it grows like a regular tree would, right?
That's correct. And I would like to tell everyone that's listening, we don't change the genetics at all. It's not our mission. Cloning that tree means that it's the exact genetic fingerprint of the parent tree. But we don't mess with the genetics. We just ask it to help reproduce itself. And to be more specific, yeah, it's a pretty elaborate cocktail in the areas of micropropagation or tissue culturing. And there's a lot of variables, and we have formulas that we've developed over the years, formulas that our colleagues around the world have suggested, and we've been able to crack the code on most of the trees that most of the world's scientists and horticulturalists said it would be nearly impossible or possible to have those trees work, but we've been very successful so far.
Wow. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with my guest, David Millark, who is a nursery owner in Copemish, Michigan, but more importantly for our show today, he is the co-founder and chief guy in the Archangel Ancient Tree Archive. We've been talking about a major global project that he's running to propagate and reestablish the ancient forests of large trees that have been basically logged into almost extinction. So, David, you talked at the beginning about the purpose of doing this, because trees are good for the environment and they absorb carbon dioxide and turn it into oxygen, and they do a variety of things that basically cleanse the Earth's environment. Are there some species of trees that excel at environmental remediation like that in some ways? I mean, regardless of their size or longevity, you were talking about big redwoods and some giant ancient trees, but are there some species that are better at that than other species, even regardless of how big or small they are?
Yes, we have a group of trees called the Waterway Series of Trees that we have literally asked the horticultural, silvicultural experts of the world which trees are the workhorses for phytoremediating fresh water, whether it be streams, rivers, lakes, the Great Lakes, groundwater in our cities, stormwater runoff in all of our cities. Which trees are the real workhorses that have the scientific data that they could clean that water up, pull out the mercury, the dioxins, and all the toxins in the water, and return it in a fresh waterway. And that's what we call our waterway trees. And people listening, if you'd like to see some of these ancient trees that we're cloning that are over 30 foot in diameter, which is wider than most people's homes, please go to our website. We have a pretty neat website, and it's very simple to get to. It's ancienttreearchive.org. That's ancienttreearchive.org. You can blog on there. You can go to our store. You can see actually our climbers climbing 3,000-year-old sequoias and redwoods and others. I think you'll find out a lot of pretty fascinating information of where they come from and what they do. So if you'd like to visit us on our website, please tune in. One of the workhorses that we're featuring at our genesis here of Archangel is the willow series. Primarily, it's the black willows. The black willows were up front and center along most stream, river, and lake fronts in the entire United States. I mean from Montana all the way east to the East Coast, from up in Nova Scotia all the way to Central Florida. That's their native range. It's huge. And there was very few waterways that didn't have an abundance of black willows. Black willows not only are proven to pull the dioxins and the toxins out of the water and the soil, but also they aerosol out things of their leaves and their roots, natural antibiotics and natural disinfectants that help all the aquatic animals as well as all of us that are in the immediate area of the black willows. Those natural antibiotics and disinfectants are very helpful for all living things. So black willow is the queen of the waterways. I highly suggest anyone that's listening, even if you live in Manhattan in New York, to look into black willow to start to help solve some of the really frightening environmental challenges like mercury, dioxins, the cocktails of toxins that have gotten into our water and our groundwater and soils. That's a good place to start. Another one that we found that has a large range of similar work is the red osier dogwoods in the dogwood family. It's an understory tree. But also, most people don't know that both those varieties of trees produce some of the very first pollens in the spring. And those pollens are gathered by the pollinators of the natural world, the bees, the butterflies, the insects. As they gather the pollen for food for their brood, they bring it back and feed the larva, and the natural disinfectants and the natural antibiotics goes automatically into the babies and builds up their immune systems for that season. So even our aquatic fishes, the aerosols from the roots of a lot of these trees, the natural antibiotics and disinfectants are held in the slime of the fishes. And last I read, we're going through fish declines all over the world. Probably, science will prove later on, that by removal of the natural filter systems and the natural ecosystem giants along our waterways, we've done more harm than we realize so far. But we started off with our waterway series of trees. Please visit our website. You can buy them. You can read about them, understand them. Another project we have is we're cloning the entire Coast Redwood Range, which is 500 miles from north to south, from the Oregon border down to Central California. We're archiving the greatest living redwoods in that 500-mile range and putting them like a Noah's Ark to preserve those genetics. We're doing the same with the giant sequoias, trees that are over 3,000 years old, archiving their genetics. And by the end of 2012, we'll have tens of thousands of these trees available to really begin to start to rebuild the world's first redwood and sequoia old-growth forests, or to reestablish these forests where 96% of the coast redwoods have been cut down and destroyed, the old growth. That's what we're doing worldwide in Ireland, New Zealand, making it available to go to the store and buy the tools to reestablish and rebuild the world's old-growth forests. That's our mission.
Okay, so I understand your mission. How and where do you spread the trees? Do you propagate? Do you replant them where they originally grew, or do you sell them to individuals who can put them in their backyard or wherever they are? Or how do you go about spreading them?
Well, one of the ways that we spread them is if you go to our website, we're making these trees available to anyone and everyone on earth that can visit our website, see the trees, read about them, and purchase them.
Mm-hmm.
We also have projects. We have design projects like, where are we going to put the world's first collection of old-growth redwood, coast redwood trees? Well, we're working with high-profile locations on university campuses so that they can be planted there, grow there, start mopping up the carbon dioxide, cleaning the soils, and as time goes by, the scientific experts can go to those trees and start to unravel their genetics. How are these trees able to grow to be the tallest living things on earth, over 2,000 years old? And why haven't they died like most of the rest that last only 1,000 years?
Mm-hmm.
So that material, those trees, will be on the university campuses where finally they can be studied for a lot of these genetic traits. So we've identified colleges and universities worldwide which will be recipients of these archival living libraries. That's another arm of the work that we're doing.
That's a good idea. What about municipalities? They buy and plant lots of trees in parks and so on. Do you target them at all for marketing or making available the trees to them?
Absolutely. There isn't one municipality, one city or village on earth that I know of that doesn't have a storm water runoff issue that's expensive and messy to try and deal with. So all municipality people that are listening, go to our website. We have a natural biotech solution for cleansing the water, for handling the excess water, for building bioswales, phytal remediation swales, a more natural, effective way of handling stormwater runoff, cleansing the groundwater. A lot of the nasty little issues that we've created by our being human and consuming things. Asphalt is one way to filter the water in our cities with our shingles and our driveways and our streets. But there is a better way. It's called natural bioswales, or reestablishing and rebuilding the natural filter systems of where we choose to live.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with David Millark about his Archangel Ancient Tree Archive. And what's a big, ambitious project to basically reestablish ancient forests of giant trees and important trees, trees that have been logged and developed almost to extinction around the world. You were talking, David, about redwoods and sequoias, giant sequoias in California, and the champion trees. I mean, so what's really so special about the champion trees, which I gather are the tallest and oldest specimens in the forest? Are they really different and superior to, let's call them, standard trees and that are already still large and old in the same forest?
Well, genetically, no trees that I know of have the entire genetic sequence has been unraveled. Perhaps an aspen is the closest that I know of. So no one knows genetically if these trees are superior yet or not, but they are different. Number one, they're survivors. The trees that we're going after are like, let's take in Florida, like the Senator Cypress. Anyone that's visited the Senator Cypress, that's 18 foot in diameter, one of the largest living cypress, you know, left in Florida. When you visit that tree, how did it get to be that big, that old, when all others have failed? In Florida, in the South, how did the live oaks, how did the angel oak get to be such a tremendously large, healthy, long-life, vigorous tree? Well, we figure before it dies, and it's too damn late, like in all entire history, no one thought about, well, let's archive the genetics of these great trees before they die so we can have a living version of this tree to study and find out how they did the wonderful things they did. So it's a preemptive thing. Instead of watching large trees grow up, get to be several hundred, several thousand years old, fall over and die and say, that's a damn shame. We come in ahead of time and archive the genetics, multiply them out, so they can be utilized and studied before it's too late.
Yeah, I'm guessing that there's some element of just luck in the case of some of these really long-lived surviving trees, that they just happen to be planted in the right place at the right time and happen to not be logged or catch a disease or whatever. But there probably is some genetic slight difference that makes them more resistant, just like there is in people, some of whom live to be 120 when all of their siblings died at 70 or whatever. So there's probably a mixture there, but definitely you can't go wrong, I would think, by trying to propagate the healthiest, longest lived and biggest specimens. So,
well, Court, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
If you got to pick your parents, would you pick both your parents that died at 35 or 38 years old of natural causes, or would you choose parents that lived to be 115 and dad got to live to be 122?
Yeah, no, that's right. That's the point I was just making. Some people are just seem to be more resistant. Their immune systems are stronger or whatever.
For a combination of reasons, yes.
Yeah, so
those are the ones that we're targeting worldwide.
So, David, do you have an idea of how many species you've propagated or cloned so far?
Over 100 different species from around the world. We just finished a project last December in Ireland We gathered some of the up to 1,000-year-old oak trees that are still remaining in Ireland in secluded pockets. We gathered 24 different species of trees last year in Ireland to begin to start to multiply them out, make them available to the people of Ireland to start to reforest with their own native trees of ancient age and obvious vigor. So we're working on that project this year. This year we're going after the cedars of Lebanon in Turkey and Lebanon. Those are the trees that King David, King Solomon, you probably know, used to build their temples. But we're going to get a collection of the cedars of Lebanon this year, make it available. We're going down to New Zealand and collect the kauri trees. Those trees, there was 5 million acres of kauri trees, which are the most sacred tree to the native indigenous people there. They're up to 40 foot across the trunk. So 5 million acres of trees. After the Europeans discovered New Zealand, there's 11 of those trees left.
That's amazing. Wow. Maybe give me another example of something beyond those that you'll be going after later.
Well, we're doing a live oak collection, the entire southern region, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, all the way across to California, and gather the live oaks this year, hopefully. But all of this work takes funding, and we're a nonprofit. We really do rely on the benevolence of others and corporations and people that reestablishing old-growth forests in their village, their town, their city, or helping build a forest that's a carbon sink to help store the excess carbon in the air. It just depends on how our funding goes this year, but we have, according to the experts that we've queried, 100 trees of the world that sequester and hold carbon faster and better than the other thousands of species of trees on Earth. So we would like to build large forests with helps of others whose sole purpose is to stack carbon, mop it up, and stack it quicker and better than other species of trees. So we've also are going to add to our waterway a series of trees more globally for European uses. You know, Europe suffers terribly from groundwater pollution, toxins. The air quality in most countries is deteriorating, so there's plenty of opportunity with plenty of different trees of the earth to work with. And we're really asking for people that are listening to consider helping us. Go to our website, ancienttreearchive.org, and see what we're doing. See how it resonates with you. If you feel compelled, sign in, call us, and help us do this work, please.
Well, David, it really is a fascinating project. It's such a neat idea, and it's such an ambitious scale that you're doing it on. I really congratulate you. So again, people can both buy some of these cloned champion trees and can donate to the project at ancienttreearchive.org. Well, David Millark, thank you so much for being on with us on American Variety and talking about your project.
Well, I really, really appreciate the time to speak with your people.
You can just Google Archangel Ancient Tree Archive, and you'll find all kinds of stories in the media going back several years even. So thanks again for being on, David, and thanks to you all for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.